a major earthquake in the middle of the United States or something,
Yes.
which they don't occur here, you know.
Yes.
Well, they do, but not. There's tremors and things, but people don't necessarily feel them or notice them
Yep.
as much, yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Okay, well, Joyce, thanks for turning the recording on. So, raise the floor and remove the ceiling. And ascension is, so this is ascending as Dave Worster commented when they write about the supposed ascension of Jesus. And he says Jesus already is, so the it's not that he went up anywhere, is that everything fell away. Is that, would that be as we experience the cares of life growing strangely dim in our ascendingness then?
Hit the nail on the head.
That's exactly what Dave said. Oh, sorry, Ion said in response to that.
Okay, I didn't hear the end of that. Ah, very good.
Am I on the shit list for something? Never mind.
What was that background noise? Did it? Oh well. Is anybody there? Is everyone
Yep, I'm
there?
here.
Okay, all right. It just got all so quiet. What'd you make of wouldn't that interesting unfolding for Virginia Ginny yesterday, or maybe it was last night, and her waking up this morning?
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
I remember having a sort of not necessarily a similar experience, but when I was in Spain about 4 years ago, I had to watch Holly having her molar removed, and they didn't have enough anesthetic in, and they realized once they'd already cut her tooth into quarters. Anyways, it was a really traumatic experience of watching your child having their tooth pulled out without anesthetic. So after it had all happened, was finished and done, I took her outside and managed to pass out. I just fainted, just I think from the stress of watching it all. And I remember coming to and thinking I wanted to just kind of stay where I was, having a very clear sense that I was actually somewhere else while I was passed out. So it
And
was very.
then when you came to, you knew that you were somewhere else and wanted to stay there and not be where you were.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that you know, this is all sort of this is way pre-ion, and you know, so I remember thinking afterwards, you know, that was really crazy. So, you know, if I supposedly what they say had lost consciousness, but apparently was very conscious somewhere else. Yeah, it's a really you know, it's really cool because you know, you're in a different state when you faint than when you're sleeping, I think. I don't know. I have to ask Ion about that. But it seems to be somewhat different to
That
me
would that,
anyway, from
that
my
would be a good
experience.
question. Yeah, because I have fainted before a couple times. It's where the you know sitting in, at a chair, standing at the sink, and fainted, and like the next thing I know, I'm coming to lying on the floor, Are you leaving? But, you know, pretty startled, and it wasn't out for but a few seconds.
Hi, Pammy, you're making a lot of racket.
You're making a lot of racket. It was a scary sensation, though, when this one time when I fainted, I knew I was fainting. I very weak, and it happens so fast. It's like it's like a boom, you know.
Yeah. It's a really good question. I used to faint a lot when I was a teenager. I think from low blood sugar level. So. Yeah, I'm really familiar with that feeling. But, yeah, I think definitely it would be interesting to kind of pursue that a little bit more with Ion. The other thing I was just thinking about is, you know, what people term as near-death experiences, and I wonder if that would sort of be that next level of that shift in, you know, quote-unquote, your consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of near-death experiences, I came across this book or movie or something recently, I don't know if I can recall, called The Third Man Factor, or something like that. Are you familiar with that at all?
No. I've not heard of it.
And it's also the angel factor or something.
No, I haven't heard of it. Was that Brian there telling Pam to be quiet?
No, it was Scott.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Sasha,
hey,
what did you think of that? Did you guys hear the Worcester segment?
Yeah,
oh,
we were just talking about that. That was awesome.
Isn't that amazing?
That was so freaking cool. That was so freaking cool.
Yeah, he really showed what we say he can do. I mean, he was saying Ionic things in his own language.
Totally. It was really cool. That was definitely going to have to be re-listened to.
Yeah.
A few times,
and,
for sure.
And overlay it with the May 19th, 2010, ninth or 10th hour. Dave develops that or goes back to it. You know, we always try to get him to do the Rai story, and he always adds a new wrinkle to it or another way. So that was a really good one.
Well,
and
I'm going to have to go back and just listen to all of that stuff because, you know, I mean, there's still so many holes in for me anyways, and you know, trying to catch up with where you're at with your knowledge of cosmic awareness and Rai and all that kind of stuff. So it filled in a few holes there, but which is a good starting point to kind of go back and you know, have something to hold on to develop further.
Right. But,
yeah, very cool.
Yeah, what you had there was, you know, Ion says on the Cold Fusion recording done on April 6th, you know, last year that we offer, he says that some shift that Dave did as a human being in the late 60s opened the world for cold fusion. So you have this significance that Ion puts on Worcester, and then 42 years later, 43 years later, you have them come together and talk. It's the Alpha and the Omega talking. You know what I mean? And that was really shown today.
Yeah. And then the earthquake, too, Bob. That was really cool.
Oh, that was amazing.
I couldn't believe it. I was just saying to these guys, I don't know if you're on, but that was just, it's not only amazing that there was an earthquake, but where it was is crazy.
After I'd said, well, that's
like
me saying something and then creating it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said in the first or second hour, right, that when Dave and I get together after.
First hour, yeah.
Yeah, and then we have it right there. you couldn't get more dramatic than that. I mean, in terms of somebody thinking that this was scripted.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was like Carolyn or something. When we first were, after we finished talking about awareness, Carolyn said, well, let's call Dave or something, you know.
Uh-huh. And
I know he sleeps in. And so when we called at 11 o'clock, or the end of the second hour, I could tell he was slightly drowsy. And I said, could you come on? And he said, sure. When? And he was a bit croaky in the voice. And he said, when? I need to, I might get ready a bit. And I said, in 5 minutes? And he goes, okay. So he goes, okay.
He's so in the flow with all of that. Just like, oh, okay. I mean, like when we called him in on tailgate,
you know,
he just blew and he was like, you're doing what? I'm doing what now? Oh, well, isn't this interesting?
and
went right into and just was right in the present moment there with us all.
That's right. He's already in the present moment. And we tap in to see what he's projecting right then. He's already in the business. And so he freshened up and took a couple minutes, and we had to hook up with another phone, and it was awkward to get him into the conference call. But then as soon as we started, his voice was clear.
Mm-hmm. What was amazing me when you guys just chatting on the show, the subject that he brought up, he mentions like this self-centered place, you know?
Yeah.
And he goes into out at sea and goes on about that and describes, the oatmeal water thing out at sea and
the Bimini, everything. He was like he'd been listening to the first 2 hours.
Right. And then he talks about the shoestring ends, those little nips that are on the ends of shoelaces in relation to seeing his nerve ending synopsis looking like that. Well, that sparked a recall for me because that was a picture that showed up in my first reading with Ion.
Right.
Was those shoestring nibs.
In relation to nerve endings.
Yeah.
Wow. And Dave's on the RNA drops, and it's very interesting, what he's getting.
I'm so glad to hear that, yeah.
Yeah.
And then just all about the heavenly water and earthly waters and the fall and Jesus and ascending. Jesus ascends, and he has nowhere to go because he already is, and everything falls away. I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's it.
Yeah, and Ion even at one point says, Dave says it better than us.
Yeah.
And after in the Bible, Ion says, guess what, Dave? We got Bob quoting scripture now. And so Dave says that, see, his father and grandparents ran the Wooster Bible College, named after the family, in Kansas. You know, it was back 100 years ago. And he said, I grew up as a boy with all these ministers around me spouting Bible. And so he knows the Bible, but probably hasn't read it much, but it's just all in him as a kid that he picked it up as a language. And so Ion then, and he talked about that part of himself, the Bible background. But he does, that's what impresses me 42 years ago. When he started talking about, it was like listening to Ion do the revelations. He talked about the Bible in a way that no one ever said before, you know, and he would just, and that was from Cosmic Awareness. It's just a very interesting conversation on any topic with Wooster. And, you know, all these decades later, I can see, I mean, that's pretty profound what Ion said in the cold fusion thing. And that happened, see, on April 5th, I called up Dave to tell him about Ion. And Ion had been around for a year. And I knew when I told him, it'd be a long talk because he doesn't like channeling and he doesn't respect it. And so it took a year before I could take the time. So I call him up, and we have a long talk, and I taped it. I think we offer that. And then the next day, we did a melting titanium April 6th, and he did the whole thing, laid it out as much as he could in that session. And then as an addendum, he mentioned the significance of Wooster. Oh, yeah, here's what happened. When I called up Dave on April 5th, J.W. wanted to, he already tuned into Worcester, and he wanted to listen to it. So he eavesdropped on the call for 2.5 hours. And I didn't know what J.W. would think of Worcester. And then when we finished, we hung up, Dave hung up, and then J.W. called us right immediately. He goes, holy shit, what a guy. And that was all new to J.W., you know, experiencing Dave. And he says, wow, I'd like to. And so I was amazed that J.W. was impressed at Worcester because they come from such different backgrounds in their lives. So that was, to me, I thought that was pretty good that J.W. picked up on Worcester. So then we, a long time later, we then did an official phone call where Dave talked to J.W. As J.W. And every now and then, that was recorded, J.W. would kind of slip into Ion. And Dave, who tends to dominate when you're talking or just sort of have stuff to say, so you listen to him. Whenever J.W. and I felt slipped into Ion, Dave would go quiet. He really recognized, oh, there's a different thing coming through here. And it was amazing, the slipping in and out of Ion with J.W. and Dave shutting up when as soon as he noticed Ion was there. But he didn't know anything about much about Ion. But on April 6th,
On a wake sense of it all.
Yeah.
But I would say his non-physical essence,
yeah.
You know.
Knew it all. Because when you listen to the May 19th tailgate, Dave isn't even sure who Ion is when Ion speaks. You know, he's, who's that kind of thing? What's that voice? And we'd say Ion. And that was that's 6 weeks after the April 5th talk. But the important thing is the next day in the cold fusion situation, after J.W. had been pressed with Worcester, Ion says that Worcester was important, and he added that on in the recording, just out of the blue. That always intrigued me that Ion would celebrate Cosmic Awareness and the Evergreens before I really talked to Ion about them, you know, in the early days, that they knew that. I guess they probably picked it up from me, but they knew what they were completing. So today's conversation really showed harmonious resonance between them.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Not really best. Yeah, just amazing. Yeah.
He was true in who he is and what he is. That
you
is,
say he's true? What's the words?
That's what Ion sees.
Yeah, that Dave is true.
And it comes all the way through you, Bob. It truly
yeah.
does.
Well, I started in 1911, apparently.
Buck the 22, huh?
The half of 22 in 1911. I mean, Ion says that I wrote a whole bunch of stuff out in 1911 somewheres. And I guess that's the other Bob.
Interesting. Okay, I'll do a little research on the prime number there.
Yeah, I think it had something to do with Illuminati. And that was the year McLuhan was born, 1911. So, yeah, anyways... it's all about Carolyn. I'm just the front man. And that whole thing about Akasha, that's pretty interesting. Do you understand what awareness taught was that there was earth, there was air, fire, and water in what was called a tridosia. So this basic structure in substance.
Yes, I do.
As we moved into the post-Rai situation, the water of the air, fire, tridosia would drop off and be replaced by Akasha. And that would be new being. And it's all that Ion's been saying in the Bible stuff. But this is 40 years ago. And so then what was odd is that back then, if you joined and took the development classes, you would be told the ratios of your tridosia. You'd be a fire, water, air, or water, air, fire, or air, water, fire, or, you know, variations. And We each got our little ratio.
In relation to one another as ratio?
No, as yourself. Like you'd ask, what's my tridosia? And they'd say fire, water, air. And that meant something.
Okay.
Oh, here's some visitors. Carolyn's got Kelly and Barbara Ann dropping in. So what happened was when we got told this in 1970, what was odd is that Carolyn was told hers was fire, water, Akasha, something like that. Two of them, but it had the word Akasha. And somebody commented, probably Dave's friend after, Vern, who was the conscious guy, he didn't, Vern, let me get
short.
These guys in here.
Because I was a gram short. He's awesome. Hey, Carol, did you mute?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Carol.
Am I on?
She's listening.
How's it
going? Okay, see you. So, so anyways, Vern says, well, that's odd, someone having the word of cash in there. And we didn't think much about it until a couple years later, talking to Dave and this and that. And then it wasn't until a couple years ago that I brought up this story, and Dave goes, what? He says, no, I didn't even know that. She was called Akasha or had that. And he said, I've never, no one I know ever had that designation. And so he's pondering this, and he says, I'm amazed I never heard the story. I said, yeah, I probably brought it up a couple times. It didn't register to him. And he says, well, that fits. And Carolyn, he knew. So it's interesting. That's what was being referred to, if you hear it again, the designation that Carolyn had shifted into Akasha already or done something.
What's the definition of Akasha? Are you referring
his
to
new being, or
yeah,
you could
Akasha
say 144,000? Well, Ion does not like the reference, the meaning of that, which comes from Theosophy to the Akashic Records. He will not tolerate
right. That.
As a matter of fact, after the show, Ion mentioned in front of Dave, said, yeah, when Dave talks, we'll even accept the word Akasha. But Dave didn't mean it in terms of Akashic Records. He meant new being, which, you know, Ion says is 144,000 DNA helixes. It means that. And it's a condition that already is. It's just that you...
Right. It's just the allowing of it.
Right. And the mortar conditions people. Remember, the mortar got caused by a good heavy mortar conditioning was the Ark of the Covenant. And when we moved into the writing space. And you heard Dave said that. It's very interesting how he talked about Rai creating dimension through thought. Note how he uses the word thought.
Yeah.
It's very precise and appropriate.
Kind of dozed off at the second hour.
Can you rephrase that, Bob?
Well, when you re-listen to what Dave said when he was describing the creation of Rai and the green stone smash, the blue stone, Rai's the blue stone smashes the green stone. And then in that judgment, he runs and he creates the dimension of man. That is created through thought. And you'll hear Dave use the word thought as a sub-operation. Oh, yeah. So then I switch over. The whole thing about mortar being locked in and conditioning people, that comes in with the Ark of the Covenant and writing. We now have, you know, gone past writing with the new electronic media, so mortar is loosened up. That's why now we can remember the Akasha, the new being, and that's what cosmic awareness meant by Rai returning to essence. And back then when I heard that idea that Rai returned to essence, that's like saying, heaven on earth or the original separateness, you mean the original whatever, it just changed last Wednesday? It was like that, right? So it took 40 years thinking about that. What was interesting was reading McLuhan at the time, and he was saying, in terms of media, he said, but the book created the separation between the eye and the book page and enhanced to extreme the visual sense, which is a separating sense. So when awareness says the original separateness, Rai returned to the plane of essence, McLuhan said with television, the viewer is the screen. The viewer is not the screen when he looks at the book. So I always thought it was interesting how McLuhan esoterically overlapped with what cosmic awareness was saying at the same period in the 60s. Hmm. See, when you watch the old cathode ray tube TV, the beam would go right through you. It wasn't light reflecting off a book page. So the light reflecting action creates the box, the frame, which then the Jews took on as a religion, and then writing, you know, spread around the world and enhanced the eye and created a major separation. In other words, started to really lock in the idea of religions. And then that was the high priest who was dominating the religion. And that was an extension of this very subtle process that began with the fake beginning, the fake beginning of Rai smashing the green stone. See, the whole color stuff that Ion talks about, and that's why my Taino chart begins with colors. That comes from Worcester's point. Experience is a color. That's the. If you don't want to put any concepts into it, it's the vibration. You notice how I use the word wavelength and vibration.
You're right, it's vibration. Color is a vibration, it's voices. And,
right.
Our visual perception of color is
right.
The vibration of light
where you are
in the eye.
Kisses, Tina.
Yeah.
Who said that? Somebody say kisses, Tina?
Yeah, well, that's me. She.
Oh, that was you. Okay. I thought it was a woman.
When she was saying it's of light, and that spectrum, may it be voice, may it be physical presence, may it be color, may it be spirit, whatever, it's just different octaves of vibration.
Right. Now, Scott, if you look up a book by McLuhan called Hot and Cool, which is a collection of criticism of him, they have excerpts of what McLuhan wrote in the 50s, and he has something called the Munsell, M-U-N-S-E-L-L, color sphere. And he talks about the Munsell color sphere is based, it's like science trying to show how color happens, scientifically, whatever the visualization was. And the Munsell color sphere was either the visually biased form, or it was the new, better color sphere, because he said the Munsell color sphere, if it was the correct one that I'm trying to remember, it puts the viewer in the middle of the sphere, whereas the previous color sphere showing the range of colors was not a Mobius strip, and it was like a more detached view. It was like a chart on the wall.
Correct.
So that's a very interesting thing to know in practical terms. Look up the Munsell color sphere and see how it was a revolution in opticians, optometrists or something. And McLuhan said, yes, it was appropriate to the electric age because it put the eye inside the sphere, not from the outside looking in.
And you said the name of the book was?
It's called McLuhan, Hot and Cool. McLuhan, Hot and Cool. And it's a collection of articles and criticism of him with excerpts from his own writings thrown in. But go to a page about 107 or 8 in the paperback version, and you'll see the picture of the Munsell color sphere.
Okay.
So, Bob, when in visually speaking, and I'm just like in my world and in here where we live, and we see all of these colors, our eyes see all these colors. So is the spectrum of color an extension of our eye?
Yeah, our visual bias. Because, you know, you've heard Ion talk about there are millions of colors. But when you start having the printed page and you go to school and they lay out the seven colors of the rainbow, and then you think that's a standard put in your mind's eye, that's only possible. That would not be possible in a pre-literate society. They don't see color. As a matter of fact, McLuhan used to say that color was not a visual medium. It was a tactile medium, which is pretty interesting. I mean, this is how crazy McLuhan sounded in the 60s. Color is not what you see. It's something you feel. And, of course, later science proved he was right, but then all that science used electronic instrumentation to measure that. So the electronic medium created the definition that color was tactile, not visual. But the book era made you think color was a flat plane.
Okay, so how do you feel color then, using what you just said?
I don't think about it, and I'm very low visual. Some people say I'm visually handicapped. Personally, I don't notice anything. If you ask me what is down on our first floor right now, I vaguely can tell you. I got no visual memory, and I got not a very good acoustic memory. So I see myself as a tactile person. I operate on a quote feeling or something else, not on the physical senses. I mean, like Sheila, what Sheila can do with color.
Tactility is the space in between.
Yeah.
Your senses, whatever senses you might.
Yeah.
So you are more
Mr. In between.
In between your senses in that, what's the word that you use?
In my preference. in my conditioning or something. Remember that song, Mr. In Between? I used to say that that was about me.
Yeah.
I understand, Tina.
No, that resonant interval, is that where,
yeah,
what I'm
yeah,
going at?
Yeah, yeah, resonant
You're
interval.
You're more the in the resonant interval.
And that's exactly the way I live. Quadraphenically
living in all the
aspects and extensions. I'm not a specialist. And in that explains, I was attracted to tactile thinkers like LaRouche, Thompson, McLuhan, and Croker, and I was attracted to the good mediums. They're in the interval. Ion is in the interval. Cosmic awareness is in the interval.
Mm-hmm.
And the evergreen.
You're in the interval.
Yeah. So my form of knowledge exploration would gravitate toward tactile forms of knowing, and that's what mediumship is.
Okay, so what were you going to say about Sheila?
You take her visual acuity. She knows everything by eye. And she'll spend, you know, weeks on a couple of eyelashes. That kind of visual memory I don't have. I don't think I have. I don't develop it. I mean, she knows things by how things look. I don't
of where they're placed in the landscape. You know, like foreground, background.
Right.
You know,
and shading.
So on, so on.
And
detail
color
shading.
I can only sing a song as it's being played. As soon as it stops, I can't remember what I sung. Unless it's Zappa. Zappa somehow, he was a tactile musician.
Or
he
Shania Twain, I'm told.
What?
Or Shania Twain.
Did you say with Shania Twain?
Or Shania Twain.
Well,
maybe you remember.
I like a couple of
her
songs. Yeah, I liked a couple of her songs, and I played them on Tailgate at my request at one point, just to put them in the record. But I don't know much about her, but I'm saying that Zappa actually is a tactile musician. If you look at how he conceived music, it was odd. And so me and the guy who wrote the book on Zappa, the best book, Ben Watson, he was the one who said to me, "No, Bob, I can sing Zappa songs. I can't sing anything else." And I said, "Yeah, same here. I think it's good enough to our standards." Was the joke way I said, you know, it's up to our stand. I'll sing a song that's good, really good. But when I think about Zappa's music, it was a tactile, kinetic approach to music. Another guy who wrote a book on Zappa said that the rhythms of Zappa's music is based on the life driving around the L.A. highways. And that's true. I spent a lot of time driving on the L.A. streets with Dave and the Cosmic Awareness crew through the year. It'd just be fun late at night cruising around the semi-empty highways with great radio on. And hearing Dave talk about what you heard him talk about today, you can't get more fun than that. And,
going, wow, yeah. Oh, yeah. I could just, you know, to be a fly on the wall, maybe I was there because I can feel that sense of excitement of the two of you going back and forth and developing in this conversation and adding to it and going on and going on and,
yeah, Paul Seibel would be driving their old wreck, and Carol and I would be sitting in the back, and Dave would be in the front passenger seat, and Dave, who was a musician, he would be analyzing the lyrics coming out of the pop radio and then relating it to these amazing metaphysical perspectives, right?
Oh, my gosh. How fun.
Yeah. And so why did I bring that up? So so the rhythms of Zappa's music, the odd rhythms for people in the 60s, was the rhythms of his environment, driving around from club to club and being a musician in L.A. in that area. That's what his music has. So that's the kinetic part. Then you have his tactile sensibility. And Zappa was definitely interested in the non-physical. He wouldn't even talk about it. He once, someone asked him, what do you think of ESP? And he says, no comment. And that was in the late 60s. So I asked him 20 years later in the famous interview that Bob Marshall and I did, I said, why didn't you comment? And he says, well, I'm not going to talk to some teenager from some pop fan magazine about something that's significant. You know, it's just not the place to talk about it. So that's why I said no comment. So you know he understood the psychic and the oracular and all that. And let me see, what was that point? So he's a tactile musician. To me, and that's what I respond to. I mean, they're very, if you notice Zappa's work, the shifts are incredible. It's like reading Finney's Wake. He's shifting all over the place, you know, from a 4-4 beat to a 17-8 beat, and then into something else. He was showing the collage of the acoustic space in
right.
from a tactile perspective. And nobody could place Frank where he was, just like you can't place Worcester. You can't place Ion. You can't place Carolyn Medicine. You can't place me. You can't place tactile people. They shift around too much, which I call quadrophenia, which is just the psychological counterpart to the tetrad. Flip, you know, enhance, obsolesce, retrieve, and reverse.
Here's something that I've noticed recently is a word that's been used maybe over the last month or two is this word kinetic that you speak, and it comes up in cash
yeah.
flow and on mom and whatever. And it was recently as well that the Obama president called something a kinetic, if anybody else can recall, it had to do with the situation in maybe Libya or Syria, and he described it as a kinetic meeting or kinetic
right.
thing.
Let me just Google that. Maybe put Obama in kinetic and see what comes up.
And speaking of kinetic, how do you define kinetic when you use that word?
Yeah, here it is. It says May 9th. That's 2 days
uh-huh.
ago. It says Obama, the headline is Obama makes, and here's a quote, kinetic military action against
right.
the English language. So that's probably the – okay, so it says in this space on Wednesday, Byron York quoted an Obama administration official, Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes, who refused to say that bombing Libya constituted war, but allowed that it, quote, involves kinetic military action.
Yeah, the bombing of Libya is a kinetic
yeah.
military action.
Well, kinetic is, okay, let's just see. So the columnist, another columnist, objects to this. And says, and just like that, my Twitter feed lit up with extra snark as folks had fun with the Obama team's ungainly euphemism. And my favorite so far, somebody wrote, make kinetic reproductive action, not kinetic military action. Make love, you know, not war. Make kinetic reproductive action, not kinetic military action, was one audience joke. Another person said, cry, quote, man-made temporary disruption. Unquote. And let's
cry
slip
me a
the,
river. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and let's slip the muzzled canine unit of kinetic military action. So I guess you yell out, man-made temporary disruption, and then you say kinetic military action. Anyways, those were two responses to this. And then the columnist says, near as I can figure, kinetic action is redundant, like wet water. Now, that's Hendiades. Hendiades is
yes.
one
yeah.
by means of two. But Harvard law professor and former head of the Bush administration's legal counsel, Office of Legal Counsel, Jack Goldsmith, thinks there's a reason the Obama administration is at kinetic military action with the English language here. So she quotes this professor. As he sees it, I guess as Obama sees it, the administration is at pains to deny we're at war because they're relying on two Clinton-era legal opinions by then OLC head, that would be the previous boss, of the guy writing this, Walter Dellinger, justifying the 1994 Haiti intervention and the 1995 peacekeeping mission in Bosnia, respectively. Quote, Dellinger, the old previous guy, essentially argued that because those interventions were consensual, limited in scope and duration, and not likely to lead to casualties, they did not amount to war within the meaning of the, quote, declare war clause, and thus did not require congressional authorization. As I noted in a 2000 paper for the Cato Institute, says the present columnist, the Clinton administration played similar rhetorical games during the Kosovo air war in 99. Here's then White House press secretary Joe Lockhart explaining that, to borrow a phrase from his boss, I guess Clinton, it depends on what the definition of war is. So, you know, America's always doing these police actions and denying it's war. So in the press conference, they asked Lockhart, is the president ready to call this a low-grade war? And Lockhart said, no, next question. Then the journalist says, why not? Lockhart says, because we view it as a conflict. And then the journalist says, how can you say that it's not war? Lockhart says, because it doesn't meet the definition as we define it. So now here's how McLuhan would take it. You know, the book is the extension of the eye. Radio is an extension of the central nervous system because it's electric, plus the ear. The wheel, the automobile, is an extension of our kinetic muscles, or the feet in rotation. So kinetic
energy and motion.
Yeah, is the
I mean,
is
that's
the muscular.
What kinetic. Right.
Right. Your muscles and your movement of your legs and arms, that's kinetic space. And McLuhan said the industrial age, 19th century, was an extension of the kinetic sense, all those links and levers and chains and connected machines, right, knee bone connected to the elbow. That connecting thing is not tactile. There's no connections in the electric circuit, all right? So the kinetic space is the big space before tactility gets extended with the telegraph and radio and TV. So McLuhan, when I read those eight kinds of plenary awareness of how do you know something, well, I know it like the back of my hand. I know it like the snake swimming
uh-huh.
water.
Uh-huh.
And McLuhan describes the sensory bias of each form of knowing. For the American bias, it's I know it inside out, was it? I know it like, yeah, I know it inside out. And McLuhan puts in brackets, kinetic, manipulatory. So manipulatory is not a term he usually uses to describe a sensory action, but it's interesting he does it for Americans. And America was built in the 19th and early 20th century on a kinetic hardware. It, you know, burst ahead of the rest of the world with its development machinery, and that was the basis for 20th century American power. And so America are not visually biased. They are kinetically biased. And that's drugs and rock and roll. Basically, dancing. All the world's dances, the hyper-pop culture.
Drugs, sex, and rock and roll.
Yeah, you would add sex and drugs when you bring in tactile electricity. You go into the interior landscape, the proprioceptive and whatever tactility is. Maybe it's close to the haptic sense. The exploration of that, I call it the inner kinetic. So drugs and rock and roll are the inner kinetic. Whereas before you had electricity, America was a kinetic culture represented in their dances, all the different kinds of dances that came out of American life. So here's America with a kinetic bias, whereas many people thought when McLuhan said Westerners were visually biased, that's true in general because they got affected by the phonetic alphabet and the printing press. But when you take the difference between England and America, the Americans have always had an inferior, up till recently, had an inferiority complex when it came to culture. They looked to Europe and to England as the real culture world because that was a culture that was built on the manuscript and the printing press before America started. And because they – am I still there? I heard a click.
No, you're still there.
Yeah, I'm still there, yeah. So the important thing is that because America built the automobile in these kinetic extensions, that really formed – the American character. It was originally visual when it came from Europe with the Pilgrims, but it got kineticized. So the difference between the visual culture of England and the kinetic culture of America explains why art and the highbrow Gutenberg printing press arts were always considered not well developed in the United States. All right? Because all the Americans would go to Paris in the 20s to get their culture. You wouldn't go to New York City back then. So there it is right there. The what America is considered an anti-intellectual culture, and that means they're anti the visual bias of the British. So McLuhan's distinction of kinetic versus visual is really important for understanding what America is. So when because it's America, because it has to have its levers on its – is everybody there? I just heard a click.
I'm still here.
Yeah. So
of all ears, I'm hearing
right,
this.
Right. So the kinetic, the tactile does not, it is not involved in when the skin touches substance or a plane. That's pressure. But when you let go and then retouch something, that's tactile. But kinetic is pressing on something and touching and making contact and manipulating it. So a kinetic culture in the hand is a Mr. Fix-It kind of guy. He can manipulate his
hands. Manufacturing industrial. It's what created the manufacturing industrial
right.
industry.
So, So manipulatory is McClune's way of saying that Americans who are hands-on, turn the wrench and that and make the tools
uh-huh.
happen, that's the American genius, the American particularity, which is different from the hoity-toity book culture of the French, say,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, find American culture vulgar because they're not kinetic. So that led to America to be, from the conspiracy point of view, that America was the cop of the world on behalf of the trilateralists or the globalists or some international hidden force, some big brother thing. So it was the cop. It went around and policed the world. That's totally a kinetic action. So America, based on its particular sensory bias, took over the world's management on the hardware level. So that's kinetic manipulatory. Now, once we get into the TV era and you have the warfare of imagery and tactile commentary and tactile interaction 24/7, that put America's kinetic bias at a disadvantage. So America went into a panic mode and tried to be a cop and still trying to be a cop all over the place. And now we have Obama, who's not really an American. he's like a tactile proprioceptive guy, or at least an acoustic guy coming from Indonesia. He names the hidden ground of America's police action, and it's called kinetic. It's actually a very precise term. Kinetic military action is totally what America does.
Interesting that he's speaking correctly, using
yeah.
a correct term, I guess.
Right, right.
In describing the bombing, the violent action in Libya.
That's right. And what is it that they refuse to say war? You can't have a war after the nuclear bomb after 1945. And that's nations fighting nations with big, massive armies and bombing each other.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what happens in Korea or Vietnam and subsequent places. They are the age of paratroopers and guerrilla action and more of CIA assassins like Project the Phoenix Project, I think it was called. That there is bombing, like napalm bombing, but that's just all mistaken, and that's the hangover of kinetic splurging, the big kinetic. All trying to preserve America's image in relation to Russia and China because of the TV vortex. The TV vortex threw every nation and their particular bias into a crisis mode. And that's why the Chinese run to America to become Americans in the university education, and the Americans run to Japan and do Buddhism or run up the mountain and look for Sasquatches. You know, that's not kinetic bias. That's America trying to be some other sensibility, because the tactile threatens everybody's innate cultural bias. So you fine? Are you still there?
Uh huh.
Yeah. So Obama is such an antidote to the American mythology. Bush tried to communicate it, and he knew not to say anything. So he just walked around. I was talking to a Canadian woman yesterday, an old woman. She says, you know, our Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, doesn't do nothing. Whenever I look at the American presidents, they're always got their sleeves rolled up and they're on the move. it was a total description of kinetic culture from a non-American. You know, she didn't think of it that way, but her words were so revealing to me what I already knew, is that she says they say the presidents are lean, sleeves rolled up, and are always walking somewhere real fast to get things done. Whereas the Canadian Prime Minister just sits there, Stephen Harper, and this was an issue because he just got a majority. He's a neoconservative, born-again Christian. He sits there, is a little overweight, and doesn't go. He's not providing any kinetic direction to Canadians. He's just sitting there very
tactile. Would be the president acting out the
kinetic bias
of this country, right?
Yeah, it's like you could look, people in the television read McClellan since the 50s. They're smart enough to figure out what it means, and we use it in Secret Council 10 stuff. So they know that it's been programmed. Get photographs of Obama or Bush or Clinton or Reagan or the other Bush or Nixon walking very purposefully from the White House to the helicopter on the go. And that's all you get. The guy's waving, right? The waving is emphatic tactile. That's acknowledgement of the TV landscape. That's the hand waving. So we're being tactile, but it's in a body that's moving with great purpose somewhere. It's hilarious. And the now here's this
that's
woman,
funny.
For whatever reason, she prefers the Canadian Prime Minister to have an American aspect. Maybe she is an American. As a matter of fact, yeah, her son is half Canadian, half American. So she's probably an American by birth, but married a Canadian. So she's an old lady, and she wants the Canadian Prime Minister to have this American kinetic aspect.
Or vice versa, just been,
conditioned.
Conditioned, good word, yeah.
Here's
yeah.
another thing. Whatever your cultural bias, because the electronic movement at the speed of thought and light of our time threatens every cultural bias because they're too slow when they're specialized. So even the Canadian bias wants to be something else. Maybe Canadians want to become kinetic. Americans want to become tactile. Chinese want to become visual. Everybody's leapfrogging into another culture clothing to deal with the fact that tactility extended is acultural, like amoral. It's not a known culture. How can you describe what goes on 24/7 a day as culture? It is when you understand McLuhan, but it's not what people think is culture, and they say the world's just getting stupider and getting dumbed down. They don't recognize its low visual definition. So me being a tactile person, I can be considered very stupid, but I'm also very flexible at saying things or emanating things rapidly without knowing what they mean. That's tactility. Yet I can't remember.
After the mom conference was over, James and MJ and I chatted for a few minutes, and I asked James if he would go back and help me to get what you had said earlier about something, because you were like so fast at like half
right.
the words I heard and I knew it, you know, kind of, sort of, it was in that in-between place,
yeah.
but wanted to fully get what you were describing, and James did a great job of clearing.
Translation?
You know, yeah. Because you do, really, so oftentimes go so fast, but it's like, you know, first nature in explaining what it is that you know to someone like I who is wanting to know what it is that you're explaining.
Right.
I'm just a little slow at it.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I'm a fast talker and I'm used to thinking that way. But I do what you're wanted from James. I do that to Ion. He goes too fast often for me. He shifts around and leaves dangling participles. And so I ask him to redo it. You know, that's what you were asking. I was going too fast. For your ability
right.
to figure out the grammar of it. Yeah, and
I
think
mean,
the grammar is important.
I jotted down a few key words and whatever and then got lost in what you were saying and was fortunately able to go back to it with James.
Well, do you remember what the point was that James explained?
Yes, well, it was something, it was about Sasha saying, what now?
Oh,
and
yeah, yeah,
sharing
yeah, yeah.
the story about seeing this video or something on YouTube.
No, here's what it is. Yeah,
or
Luther, this TV series Luther ends with the hero in trouble and going, what now or what's next? And then the last Wednesday, on the, you know, 24 hours later on rewrite, and at one point Sasha says, okay, Ion, what do we do now? And Ion said, Bob. That's the story about around what now. And
right. And that, yeah.
And then Sasha said, Bob, are you still there, Sasha? Maybe she's gone.
Yeah, no, I'm here. I'm just on mute.
Am I getting it right? You went, Bob. And then
yeah,
I said,
yeah.
And
yeah,
I said, well, you're
because
going.
Because Bob's washing his hands about 25,000 times, and I thought that Ion was going to say, Bob. That's 72 times you've washed your hands in the past 3 hours. So I sort of waited for another explanation. And it, you know, I was like, no, Bob, we met Bob.
Yeah, yeah. So what he said, once there was that awkward, you know, waiting, figure out what was meant, he said, you need to go through, Bob, so you can drop it.
Uh-huh.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that to me is working out your word power in relation to mortar. We're all conditioned by the medium of mortar, and the tiny note chart is so powerful, or I've been doing it for so long, it's become a meme like Darwin's or Einstein or McLuhan stuff. I'm not on that huge, popular, well-known level, but it, in Dobstown or Irondom, this chart is important, and I created an aspect of mortar or developed mortar in it or enhanced mortar. I am saying to figure out what word really is, you've got to figure out what Bob's concepts and mortarization do to confuse you about your own word power. That's how I understand what they mean. He means by saying you got to go through Bob's stuff so you can drop it.
Mm-hmm. It was really interesting though. Last night I only listened to maybe the first hour and a half of Mom, but that was probably you know, I really appreciated Pam's perspective. Sue's perspective on that, because Ion laid things out that made way more sense than anything.
That's
and
right.
So that comment that he made last week on Rewrite about understanding, you know, your chart,
yeah,
suddenly, again, you know, pieces started falling into place, because
right,
I didn't get it last week at all.
But you got it there. And here's Buzz. You heard me talking about Buzz Coast and complaining about, you know, Ion's ridiculous. That really is an incredible commentary on McLuhan and the action of McLuhan by Ion in that 4.5
mm-hmm.
hours. It was very,
yeah,
very good.
Well, Joyce and I were talking about it last night too, and on the phone, and you know, I was saying to Joyce, I still am trying to figure out why the hell it's so important that we understand McLuhan.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, I don't get it. And then, you know, half an hour
And you
later,
were saying that after hearing Mom.
Before.
Oh, before, and then you got it,
yeah,
on Mom.
Yeah. Yeah. So I phoned up Joyce quickly. I was like, how do you listen to that?
And James was saying in knowing how to do a tetrad. Is,
right.
And what that is, so then you have a knowing of what's coming by being able to define the ground and the figure and how it flips.
It'll obsolesce an older ground, retrieve an even further forgotten ground, which will come back in a new form, and then push extreme flips into its opposite. That's the four-part structure of the chaos we live, so it's made reduced to four laws or four aspects of a pattern. That's what I mean by we're all quadriphenix. We're actually doing that four levels, and until you hear it spelled out to you, you don't know you're doing it. But it's a good formulaic reduction of the chaos people experience today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sasha just had to think about how she interacts with her kids. There's a lot of enhancing, obsolescing, retrieving, and flipping into in what she does in the crazy things that come up with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we just telling out now. Go
I
ahead.
I was going to ask you, Bob, do you remember ages ago we were talking about Tron?
Yeah.
I started watching that the other night, and I was falling asleep, so I got to go back and watch it. But what was the part that Ion said that you played in it? Because I remember you
that's the if you go on my timeline and look at the Kurt Weller Plaza of the Mind things I was doing the past year. And the last one we did was on the new Tron, because Kurt had seen it when...
Do you remember the dates?
I could look it up. I could look on the timeline and tell you in a minute. But the...
It's like
3 months ago. It's when it came out, when Tron 2 came out, because he'd been a fan of the first Tron when he was a kid. So he was really keen on it. And he went and watched it. He'd just come from work, and he was kind of in a zombie state. And it just went by, and he just enjoyed the special effects. But he knew he didn't get it, so he goes back like the next day and watches it again, but he's familiar, so he can start putting conceptual overlays in it. And he suddenly realized, shit, it's all about Bob and Ion. and so he called me and said, we got to have a session. We hadn't had one for a few months. We got to talk about this. And so we did, but I had to put my mind back into it. The guy invents something, and he goes into another world, and then he gets stuck in that other world for 20 years. and then these ionic fairies come along.
His son goes and finds him.
Yeah.
Finds him in his game, because he's in a game, stuck in the matrix.
Yeah, the word Tron. I remember commenting on that. T is the 20th letter. That's 2. R is the 18th letter. That's 9. So you add 2 and 9, TR, and you get 11. And you can make one of those ones of 11 and put that in front of ON, and you get ion. So you can see ion embedded in there. And ion's always talking about the neutrons, electrons, protons. And so there's in the word, and the very name of the fairy-like bubble people, you know, what was it that was around, the magical part of it?
I don't think I got that far.
Oh, you haven't finished it. Yeah, there's this, you know, fairy bubble kind of being, or a bunch of them, that are, to me, represent ion. And they help the guy studying them for 20 years. And then when the sun comes, and they have to go fight a war against the bad guy who wants to buy up and sell the bubbles. That's the drama at the end. But, yeah, I'll get the date, and you can...
Yeah, because I was just looking on your timeline. There's lots of Kurt Weller's Plaza
okay,
of
look,
the Mind.
Go to down the bottom. Go back to about December, and just look at the date, December, on the far left, and look for the last Kurt Weller Plaza of the Mind, whatever it's listed as.
Yeah, there's one on the January... Episode 3001.
Right, that became the name of the show, 3001, but then it'll have an alphabet letter after it, so there's a whole bunch of three. So that's what it is. The last one's a 3001, and looking at the timeline, you say January, episode, yeah, January 3rd. That looks like the last one. I'm pretty. That would be it, because we didn't do one after that. Yeah, January 3rd. So that was start off the new year with, you know, Bob Zanocrony. That strange synchronicity. These movies come out and people know my stuff say, well, that's Bob stuff. But the reason McLuhan is really significant that Ion played McLuhan in the first two mois, right? That was Marshall on Ion, he called it. Because you listen to it, Marshall is talking about tactility. He's the first Western tactile philosopher. And that's coming out of Finnegan's Wake, which is a tactile novel. That is the beginning of Ion. That's how you understand how Ion is a tactile phenomenon. And Ion used the word tactile pretty early, and I don't know how much I had said it before in the first few months, but I was amazed that he took on that word. And I asked him, I didn't think he was using it right when at the beginning. I said, what do you mean by tactility or tactile? He said, contrast. And that was the first time it's ever been defined that way, but it's totally accurate because tactility, McLuhan said, is encountering the bounding line. If you have cartoon figures and they can have a very thin line and not have abrupt interfaces with the other characters, but the abrupt interface of a thickly drawn cartoon character with an outer thick line, that's tactile because it's the interfacing and encountering of interaction and that dynamic. And the way the senses know it is through the kinetic. So McLuhan predicted that if you take tactile electricity, say television, push it to extreme, make television a major environment, it will flip into its opposite characteristics, which he called hyperkinetic. And it's been a hyperkinetic society since Reagan in America. So the tactile, sort of more, quote, peaceful 50s and 60s, some people now say simpler time, the Beatles time, that flipped into the manic 80s of hyperkinetic where everybody got chronic fatigue and candida and burnout.
And see, the whole me generation, was that in the 80s?
The me is named in the mid-70s. It's more the 70s, but it the me was like the last phase of the satellite era, which was extensions of human beings, and the satellites float around the planet and saw all the previous media environments. So in the 60s, the do-your-own-thing expressed the hope, wish, desire to not be impeded upon by any social structures or media structures, and that was a knee-jerk, subliminal response to floating around the whole thing as a satellite. Now, that's the, and that get manifested as the me decade. But then the Android meme, which is a digital replay of all that history of media, that leads to computers, and computers are the virtual me decade, the replay of the me-ness. And it fills itself in with hyperkinetic. By the 80s, 90s, everybody's saying in America, life's too busy. I can't keep up. I don't even know, you know, what time it is. And that is a result of having the TV tactile environment overused, didn't turn off the TV environment, and it flipped into hyper opposite kinetic movements, especially for America, but it went around the whole world.
And this is when, and this was a time when televisions, the actual, you know, apparatus of a TV started showing up in every room in the house. And
yeah.
The TVs got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Or shrunk.
You know,
there was lots of portable TVs.
52-inch screen, wide
yeah.
screen.
No, that's the big screen. The big screens come in the late 90s in reaction to the shrinking chip body. That's the TV, old TV landscape. Say, no, look at me. Look how big I am. As people were starting to use the cell phones. It was a complimentary response. And I remember this.
Okay.
When I lived on City Island, I can place it time-wise. That's 2000 to 2007. I watched the little houses get bigger and bigger screens by the middle of the decade.
Uh-huh.
You know, just
uh-huh.
bigger and bigger. So the major expansion of the screen is in the last 15 years. But they started to get bigger and more high definition in the 80s and 90s. But it was fragmenting as cable TV and multiple channels. So it was trying to make itself friendly to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Every type of mind or preference, and that was its attempt to be user-friendly while the digital took over, really took
and
over.
This,
as every.
Yeah, and this taking over the digital chip body electric environment that we're submerged in these days, mostly.
Yeah.
It shows everybody loses their identity, and then you have all this violence.
They lose their cultural identity. The fake identity that TV brought in after World War II,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was a literate newspaper identity before that. Then it became crazier in the 60s and 70s. That went into panic mode. And when you read Croker's book, Panic Encyclopedia is a great book because he goes through the whole range of things that humans do in the media age and puts the word panic in front of. So, yes, TV became panic. And what are you still there? I heard a blink.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it you just said? You were citing?
What's been showing up is all of these violent acts, individuals,
yeah.
You know,
now
Columbine and Georgia Tech and all of this, you know.
Those are individual simulated satellite people. Loose cannons go around trying to impose some image on the TV spectacle. But here's a good thing. Why does American TV have nothing but cop shows and detective shows? You got two dynamics there. You got the probing around trying to figure things out in a tactile culture caused by TV. That's the popular detectives,
mm-hmm.
detective shows, and I Spy and those kind. But the other thing is all these cop shows. That's kinetic space. That's cops wheeling around, moving fast and running and busting down doors. That's the kinetic, that's hyper-kinetic
American. Well, I think
American.
The cop shows, okay, but the cop shows have gone to the wayside, I think, these days on TV, because what's replaced with it is reality TV
yeah,
shows.
Yeah, that's...
More
that's,
reality TV shows are everywhere.
Right. The kinetic aspect is probably not so dominant in America today. George Bush represented the silent, stubborn, kinetic guy. Didn't say anything, just talk, purposeful,
right.
you know.
Copping the world, being cops of the world
yeah,
and all
the whole
that.
World. Right. So the cop show thing is, you know, chips, what were those? There's all kinds, Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah,
I'm talking
Kojak and...
Yeah, many of those shows from the 70s, 80s, 90s. We're now well into the mystery landscape and post-tactile thing. So, yes, by 2000, it was like the death, deepest levels, the death of the chip landscape with Y2K exploding but nothing happening. And then everybody was sitting around the campfire like cavemen and trying to survive. That's the modality that's expressed in the reality shows. It's the final It's the Dobbs quadrant, where I call anthropomorphic physical. It's post-media. And everybody
right.
for themselves, and conniving with much media savviness, they know the previous environments, and they scheme and plan their strategies against each other, right? With no morality, no ethics. That's a that's the Bush era.
Yeah.
And that is post-kinetic, certainly. But the what's interesting is to see how the kinetic aspect carries on, maybe in cartoons for American kids. You watch
sure.
the continuation of the meme, the idea of kinetic space. You can't have it anymore, so it's the meme. So that's what Android meme means, the battling of the different cultural images and memes that don't really have a grounding anymore, because the digital seamless web has no ground. Where is it?
Well, what did and I don't know if this relates, but Dave Worster, when he first came in to Cashflow, he made this comment of being in a self-centered place.
Yes.
He was describing his sensibility with noticing since taking RNA.
No, you're
and
mixing
ion,
up a couple things. Here, I think he was talking about how he as a medium made no money. And he said he could be a medium if he did not exert his own identity or power or will. So it was a very passive state. He said, and so people came and took the money and ran, all right? So he said that. And then he said occasionally he would put his foot down and do something. And if you listen again to it, I think it's there. He says, I'd move into a self-centered position of asserting myself, whereas generally being the medium for causing awareness, I didn't do that. So see if that's where he says self-centered, because the RNA drops
he
is something
said it,
else.
He said it right before he described creating oatmeal water to
right.
relieve
and that
cramps
was,
out at sea.
Yeah, the cramps.
So
the cramps would. The cramps were a metaphor, I think, for him getting pissed off.
Smoke.
And, yeah, and his personal self.
Okay.
What? No, I mean, He every now and then fucking realized he was a fucking person, and what the hell was he been doing for 3 years? Been unconscious. He kind of wake up and notice that they kicked him out of a house. He has no place to sleep, and someone stole his house from him. It would never get that dramatic, but that's a metaphor. And at that point, he'd become self-centered and assert his tantrum about it, and get back
and get some money to reset his
right.
state.
You know, I don't know if we go into it. It may be on the first Worster recording that we did on April 5th, just privately when JW was lurking. And it might be talked about in the May 19th thing, which is like 6 weeks later. He talks about he takes his vote very seriously for some reason. And when there were moves in the fall of 2008 to not give people older citizens they weren't on the registrar for the Obama election. And there was a scandal. I remember that going. And Worster had a problem. He wasn't on he checked it out. He wasn't on there. So the weekend of September 8th to the 12th, he says, I'm going to do something. Now, you can listen to Who's Forgotten Fury Lynn. He got mad in January 1986 because someone stole his dog. And the result of that was the Challenger crash, because it's right on tape. I called him up.
Wow.
And you can hear it on the Who's Forgotten Fury Lynn, which has a lot of early Worster talking. And a couple weeks before January 28th, he said, January 26th, 28th, 1986, he said, someone stole my dog. And he said, someone is going to pay $40 billion because of this. I'm going to make my chess moves. And it's a rare time when he gets pissed off. And then 2 weeks later, Challenger blew up, you know, like $40 billion of damage. And I called up Dave that day, and I said, hey, do you cause this? And he says, damn right. And someone had to pay, and so it turned out to be the Challenger. And so then I broadcast this whole sequence on CKLN, and while it was being broadcast, there was an earthquake in Toronto. And there's never any earthquake in Toronto.
So is this what
and that's
he
all
was
recorded
referencing
on the Who's Forgotten
today?
You can hear that
is this
on the
what
Who's
he
Forgotten
was referencing
Forgotten.
Today about this power that he came – he came into his power and
yeah,
is
he
okay.
can do it. J-Dub is always talking about it and doing it. But Worster was the first person who talked that way that I knew, 45 years ago. he would he'd prefer not to.
And then you and Dave go off and create this earthquake in Spain this afternoon. Criminy.
See, that's why I call myself Rai on Dupes. Replaying Rai. But the thing about Worcester is re-listen to what you heard. It's very precise
I
what
will.
He says. Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. I really liked him when he did the equations feelings plus awareness equals the compassion.
Oh,
space.
Yeah. And he said no emotion. That he was exactly agreeing with Ion.
No emotions, feelings,
yeah.
Just those
yeah.
feelings. And then, but he did say, and I'll go back and listen, awareness with emotions creates the angelic forms.
Oh, yeah. He just slipped into the angelic, and you heard Ion go, ho, ho, ho,
ho. Oh, yeah. Ho, 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 ho. So, yeah.
And that's example. He's going along with a thought, and you don't even know, you know what he's saying. But and all of a sudden, he brings in angelic. Where the hell did that come from? I mean.
I know. I was just so blown away from the whole third hour.
Yeah.
Because it's like he already knows what it is that's being said or has
yeah.
been said or
yeah.
is being talked about
yeah.
or defined, you know?
I got to go do a rewrite, but you go to Dobbstown.com and listen over time to the 24-hour interview with Worcester, which gives the whole incredible history, including Bob Carr. And you notice Ion brought it up at some point. What about Bob Carr? That was said in the first hour. So there's a long interview with Bob Carr, about 22 hours, and then Dave Worcester. They started back in the 50s in the Center of Integration. That's where L. Ron Hubbard came and spoke in the nude, and that's when they did the LSD, sponsored by Captain L. Hubbard, the CIA guy. So that whole background leads to cosmic awareness. It's a very important, interesting history that leads to Ion. And so check that stuff out. I it's a total of 24 hours with Dave done over many weeks, you know, a couple hours of
right.
session. But
I will
also
check it out.
Yeah, also go on Dupes. There's something there. The Ionettes, the tailgaters go to the original Ion. And
I was thinking, what's in there? Because that's what I've listened through all of that.
That's a 3 hours and 45 minutes radio thing I put on where I feature McLuhan, LaRouche, Zappa, Dave Worcester, May Brussel, all the holy offices that I was putting on the radio back then. But you hear a lot of good Worcester stuff. You know, it's scattered throughout there. And
original tailgaters, I think it is. Something
yeah,
like that
I think
yeah.
What it is, it starts off with me and Carolyn walking up to Garrett Dean's house. And Garrett sounds like Ion when you hear it. It's pretty close. So it's like the original tailgaters visit Ion. It was a put-on title. And then you go and you hear this thing that happened back in the 80s.
Right.
That's the effects
right.
preceding the causes.
Right. So when y'all were talking, just a heads up to you, I don't know if you saw it yet, when you were talking about your bowel movements in the first
yeah.
hour, which I thought was really, really funny. And
I
may have
hilarious.
Put this to you. That was. But, you know, and I sent you an email to How Ionic, because I didn't have any other email about shit.
Oh,
and
okay.
it's hilarious. And you may have seen it before, but it's it just goes about all about shit. It's kind of like a comedic, I don't know, I
okay.
view it something like George Carlin would
yeah,
say. So
sounds like
you
a
might
Carlin
want to read
thing.
That read that
okay.
on next
all
week's
right.
show or something. Be a funny follow up if
right,
you like
now,
it or not.
Who was here originally? Scott Joyce? Was Pam here?
I don't know. It's Sasha.
An hour and a half ago. Sasha was here?
Yeah.
So who's left now? Is it just you? Anybody
I think everybody went to rewrite because
right.
you need to go too because it's
633. Right. Okay.
There's my numbers. See you later.
Wait, you said 63 is your number?
33.
Oh, 33. Right. Okay. All right. Talk to you later.
All righty. Bye now.
Okay. Bye.
Scott, are you still there? Scott?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Matt? Hey, hi.
Hi.
Were you listening to all of that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, Pam was around, too.
Well, she was earlier, and then she left.
Well, she takes Bob offensively oftentimes. Well, Bob tends to run over people. I don't know if he means to or not, but he does.
I don't know if he means to or not either. I don't know. It's just kind of a style, I guess.
It's a various sort of style. I do understand that.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel like fighting. My question was Ion had spoke last week or the week before about Yahweh, Elam, and the other names of God, and these are Jewish names, the 72, and he said each one is a different entity, but yet us looking at them, we would all see them as one. Well, tell us the more.
Can we consider that just various folks or groups in their naming of what they consider God to be?
Separate.
And that they're just naming it?
No, they're separate entities. But from our platform of view, they would all be grouped as one.
Huh.
But yet they are all definitely different. Just as Ion is a group of mega, so to speak. Well, evidently from that little clue that was given, that, you know, there's way, 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 way much more than we even contemplate.
Or have gotten to the place to consider.
That's a nice way. Yes, that's a good way of putting it.
You know, because it is, I mean, I'm going to see, or I'm not, notice an unfolding thing occurring.
I'd be doggone.
And so we definitely are in what's been named the mystery landscape, but it's only
no mystery about you.
A mystery until you come to a new knowing place, then what wasn't known becomes known, and that knowing place is no longer a mystery for you or for I or for whomever, and you move. You get that, you know, kinetic, energetic, moving thing of unfolding more of what is an unknown that then becomes known and is no longer a mystery, and the landscape continues to unfold your next mystery that you may take notice of, because, you know, it's all that individual thing. Some may notice, others may not. Something that I notice might not come into a view or perception for another, and likewise vice versa. And then I have this noticing or awareness or isn't that interesting? I wonder why this is showing up now. Or I'll
No,
I've noticed it, and there you have it. And can I make sense of it? What does it say to me? All of that sort of thing. Is there something I should consider about this?
Mm-hmm.
If so, whatever. And then I, these days, kind of just, if I make sense of something that shows up, good. If not, good.
That's
you know what I'm,
one of the
you know what I mean? Pardon me?
So much.
What's that?
That that's just one of the reasons why I like you so much. Your dissection process and thought is quite incredible.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
I do.
Okay. Well, Scott, having been a seeker for so seemingly a long time, or just the span of time, however long that is, and then coming to this knowing that that is always going to be the next new unknown thing, and it never, for me, has allowed a settledness about trying to get to the bottom of it, you know, kind of thing. Or trying
will.
To figure out what the fuck is going on, you know?
Who?
Which is where I used to be, and not so much these days.
Well, it's the shift, babe. It's the shift. I mean, and when I say we, not just you and I, but Pam and Bob, which doesn't like to cop to it, as each step of the Zygot, that's not a proper pronunciation.
Zygote?
Babylonian pyramid. Each step goes up, that in-between stage is not always comfortable. It leaves you in that state of in-between. That's where you're at right now. It's okay.
I'm good with the in-between place. Like Bob, I think when I get there, you know, I think that's what Bob was saying earlier on. He's a tactile individual. He's all in the in-between, the senses of tactility. The resonant interval place.
No, he doesn't like to cut to the core stuff. I mean, the discussion parts, all fine and dandy and all that stuff, and thought-provoking, and you can get wrapped up in that for eons. Why not just cut through the crap, you know? Hey, you know, proof's in the pudding. Bottom line. Screw all the rest of the stuff. Proof is in the pudding. What is the final results? Is it fact or fiction? Are we on track or off track? Those are the important things. Now, he made comments quite a while ago. Actually, it wasn't him. It was Ion. He said, hey, you want to make $1 million? Build a new religion. Well, my personal thoughts on that is I don't whore out those things that are that precious to me. I don't do it. I give them away first.
Right.
So anyway, I will see you in your psychic dreams, because I have a feeling I should get off the phone right now.
Why? What's been going on in your world these days?
contrast. I had my brain disconnect to be able to rewire. And
was that dramatic contrast or just a bit of contrast to get you to a preference place?
Both. But what it has done has placed me in a position of being deliberate in all that I do, say, think, and act upon.
Okay. Is that a good place for you?
Well, as you spoke earlier of the first readings, experience interchange with Ion, I also had one also that finitely directed my thoughts upon the words I speak and how much effect they have in the painting and creation of the things manifested in my own personal world.
Wow.
Including
in
you. I can't wait to see you. I mean, I won't say I can't wait. I'm very, very anxious to see you.
So you had a private session with Ion, and it was good. That's very cool stuff.
All the questions I had wrote down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I got any of them.
Yeah, I know how that is.
And as this is all integrated into me throughout and in my learnings and knowings, experiences, and all the other details that have filled up me to the point where I am right now, those core things I still know. That's what's important.
Yeah, you can't unknow what you know.
I'll be doggone.
And I mean, and
that's what I said.
However, you can take what you know and where you are, you know, overlay to a new place of knowing. I mean, bringing with you all that you know with an overlay. You know, maybe it is. Defining again what you thought you knew, but got it, you know, gets tangled up and
we as humans
false premised and whatever.
And what we
think
that the omnipresent and omni all thinks, does in that perspective. We're very arrogant in that.
Yeah.
We're each just a speck of an essence of that creation. Yes, we can tie it all together. That chromosome 14 is a pathway and a key. Hi there, whoever just showed up.
I think that was somebody leaving.
Oh.
I think. I get that sound. Sometimes it sounds, I think that was the sounding of someone going.
Oh, that was a rival. The leaving has a lower vibration to it.
Mm.
It has as we were talking about light earlier and colors. Oh, what I want to tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever knew this, but have you ever heard of Pelican Bay State Prison?
Say that again?
Pelican Bay State Prison. It's an infamous place where
okay.
they worst of the worst and the ugliest of the ugliest that can't be handled anywhere else.
Okay.
Okay, that's where I worked for a long time. But my job was an ancillary position, and I had work crews that I did, and we did all kinds of functions. Anyway, one of the things I did in one of the factories I had was that I went to a person that was a specialist in color, vibration, and how it had affected people. And then I ended up going and having custom made all these kindergartner primary colors that we painted graphics with in the shop. And it was, what, 20,000 square feet or so? No, not that big. That one was about 6,000 square feet. It changed the demeanor of the entire shop just because of the vibration of those colors coming. Like music, how you can set a tone, colors do the same thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I was saying. All these things are just different vibrations, and Bob brought that up with McLuhan's perspective on it. I have not read McLuhan's perspective, but I've read many others. And I've tested the effectiveness on all the way to, at one point in time, when I had control of the laundry, I put lavender in all the laundry throughout the institution. And I ran a rumor that said, hey, we're doing a testing right now, a survey, just so we can buy you guys. And so.
There's someone.
Your stuff in. And they would. They did. And
through the vibration and of smell.
What is lavender?
The aroma of lavender.
Yes.
Which is very soothing and calming and relaxing to the nervous central nervous system.
All the violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Lowers blood pressure and all kinds of cool stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as soon as it was discovered, it was mandated that that was not an appropriate thing to do. And they'd appreciate that not happening again. Because where their money is made is on that negative bullshit.
Wow.
I knew the people who do.
Isn't that something?
Thank you.
If ever we get mail, we always put it right there on your desk.
Oh, okay. It's for my sister.
Well, and what you're speaking of, obviously, it's what the aromatherapy is all based on.
So is color. So is all
feng shui and
the same thing. That's what I was saying. You know, we've been talking to all these details, you know, slicing, dicing, dissecting. Let's get to the real core foundation principles of all this.
Well, in this word that I brought on earlier, kinetic is energetic, energy in motion is what, how kinetic that is defined in the dictionary.
I want to kiss you when you brought that up, too, by the way.
And it is what...
It's actually...
And so, you know, tactility is it would be energetic movement. It's the movement of energy from here to there, that resonant interval in between. Like you were saying, that in between is what kinetic is. Energetically is just the movement of energy is what can, and in order to, when my senses are activated, that's a kinetic movement.
Good one.
If I'm seeing color or visually seeing something or smelling something or touching something, Now, maybe that isn't kinetic energy.
I'm going to see you. We have a lot to catch up on, actually.
Yeah. You haven't been around.
Yes, I know. And
well,
that...
everyone, you know, it seems to me that most people go out to recess for a bit, and then
you play,
yeah,
and come
yeah.
back.
Yeah.
Well, I could not even move on my left side. I could not move my arm. I could not hardly raise my leg. My right and left brain functions separated, and the reason that all that stuff disconnected was to reconnect much better. And it happened on Good Friday as I was drinking hot chocolate and nutmeg.
That's contrast.
I'd be doggone. So how does one take that? You know, I knew it happened for a good reason. And at the year, I had my physician, I've called him chief for the past God knows how many years. He is chief of the hospital here, chief of staff. He's also a diplomat of the AMA. I went in the beginning of the year, I said, I want you to do a baseline on me all the way across the board. Because you're going to see things this year that are going to blow your science off the charts. He looked at me and smiled. I'd already given him a desire box. So he's got a pretty good indicator that I'm aware of the higher sciences.
So when, on Good Friday, when this contrast showed up,
what time did
that? Did you go and visit the doctor again?
Oh, no.
No.
Why would I do that?
I don't know.
No, I didn't go back to it, a couple of days ago, a few weeks after. I mean, at one point in time, you know, you live or die, one or the other. As I felt
right.
that blood clot dissolving, I knew it could move, and oh well, you know, you live or die. You know,
right.
I play for keeps, so I'm not playing chicken shit. And I'm
what comes to mind is the Creator's part, the second or third paragraph in the Creator's Prayer that says, allow forgiveness of my trespasses, as this is only contrast that I purpose to help me choose the fastest path to my joy. I mean, so I say, what?
Ion said something very similar to that to me. Because I did write to Ion and ask him. And it's a good thing. Oh, and I knew right when it was happening, I also saw some pot, and I thought I'd been spiked. Because I felt my brain disconnect from my body. I felt it happen. And I said, my God, you know, somebody, you know, that friend who gave my friend this was no friend. And so I waited, Kelly. And so I waited until she got back. I said, Kelly, you know, I don't think that was a friend who gave you that smoke. And she goes, well, I feel fine. So I went and I looked at the nutmeg, and at that point in time, I could only read about halfway through the article. And it turns out that it is a narcotic and a hallucinatory
in nature. And it takes 24 to 36 hours to get out of your system. So I let it go out of my system, figuring, oh, everything clear up. Well, it didn't. I said, well, this happened for a reason. What is the reason?
Yeah,
so I went,
yeah. We create everything that we want, that we experience, to the contrast of whatever. If it's a contrast thing or whatever.
MRI,
you
yesterday. Now, go on those little tubes, and big tubes, actually, and because I want it all documented. I know what's coming out the other end. Right now, I'm just kind of rewiring myself, and what it is it makes me deliberate to where what I say is deliberate, what I do is deliberate. Even holding the phone in my left hand right now, as I am, is deliberate. It takes, in my conscious thought, control and guidance for that piece of my body that I'm using.
Wow.
Really quite incredible.
So,
I'm very thankful about
share
it.
With me if you care to, and it's fine if you don't, and you
do
made a comment. Clothes? What's that?
Do I need to take my clothes off first?
That's up to you, Scott. I mean, I don't know that we're going to have tailgate sex or not, but I mean, I'm not, but hey. So, no, I'm joking. In your session with Ion, you said that even the, I don't know, something about me was showing you something, or I don't know, you didn't really state it too clearly, and I'm asking you to.
We're all connected, Tina, very deeply. I mean, why do you think you and I have been speaking for the past year? You think that's by accident? The words that have come out of your mouth, the knowing that has come out of your mouth, you think that's by accident?
No, there are no accidents or coincidences.
Do you think some of the comments I've made to you, which haven't always been really nice, do you think that they were without merit? Exactly.
No, it was just me, well, co-creating contrast to get me to, and get you to your next knowing place. I know for me was having to let go of authority.
The whole group, and as you drop that pebble into the pool, and those waves, those ripples go out and out and out and out. They never cease. That energy continues on, just as the words we speak.
Mm-hmm. Interesting that you bring up the pebble dropping in the water, creating ripples. I just recall there's I think it's a Mayan word called, it's pronounced Canateek.
Pretty close, yes.
And
I love drawing down your intelligence.
And Canateek means to care for.
Yes.
Right? And many years ago, in my business, that was kind of a part of my mission statement was Canateek, which means to care for. And I wrote a poem and used a visual of a drop of water dropping into water and creating that ripple effect, and that the ripples flow out never.
Forever.
Wish I could remember. I wish I might have it here nearby.
Sure.
But I just, the synchronicity thing that occurs.
I really like it. What I mean by anal, I mean that in a nice way. Organized.
Yeah, not so much. I'm organized in some spaces and not so much in other.
Well, we all have the things that we like to do, and therefore
right.
We're really good at it.
So here goes. Cast a pebble into still water. You'll create a ripple, once, twice, triple. Collective power, the Canateek ripple.
Please send that to me. That's
okay.
A beautiful poem.
Yeah.
It is beautiful. And it has the catch on it and the substance behind it of a very, very worthy just do it by it's a thesis statement almost. It is a thesis statement that has huge effect. Kisses to you. Seriously. That
I'll send it to you.
Yeah,
you'll
that
enjoy
is
it.
An incredible thought. Oh, you want to hear something I just came up with, actually? I just came up with it. I converted it, too. I've used this. It's called the 7 P's. And I finally found the twist to make it positive. Proper prior planning promotes premium performance properly.
That's good. What is the 7 P's? Say them again.
Proper,
can you?
Prior.
Wait a minute. Proper prior
planning promotes premium performance promptly.
Promotes premium
performance.
Perfectly? No, that's not what you said.
Promptly.
But it could be.
Promptly.
Promptly.
Perfect is too much of a subjective term.
Right. Proper prior planning promotes premium
performance.
Performance.
Promptly.
My writing got squirrely on me. Performance. Promptly. Oh, that's good.
It just catches it right there.
Yeah, there's someone. Hello. That was a ring in.
Yes, it was. We have a lot of beautiful people.
Pam.
Hi, Pam.
Pam?
How are you guys?
Good.
You're back.
I'm back. I didn't go anywhere.
You've been here all along.
I've been listening on and off today, yeah.
Okay, alrighty.
Yeah.
Well, how goes it, dear?
Good, and JP's with me. We've been fighting about the size of McDonald's french fries just now.
Who won?
Eating
McDonald's. Well, because I asked him to order an extra large, but he came back with like a small.
Vegetarian.
What's that?
That's hardly enough to share. I hope he got too small.
Oh,
I noticed.
And I said to him, I've been talking to these people for 2 years about interdimensional parallel world shit, and today I'm fighting about french fry sizes. Please.
Yeah. It comes in all sizes, Pam. You know that.
Yeah,
and interdimensional parallel traveling.
But I like the supersized version.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Now you can take your clothes off, Scott.
I was trying to tell him about Sasquatch, and he doesn't believe about the Sasquatch.
Who?
Oh, they're very real.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very real.
A whole tribe, a whole family out there?
There are many tribes. There's lots of families.
Why haven't you been able to take pictures of them or start proving them as a fact now instead of like myth?
What do they have to prove? When you're good, you're good. What do you have to prove to anybody?
Well, that they exist.
Documented proof all over the world. Go back and look in Russia. I mean, but they're like the Marines. They never leave their own. There have been ones that have been killed in battle, all kinds of stuff. Not in battle, but stepping in between to stop battles. And they'd go back to clean up all the dead, and they'd be gone because they do not leave their own.
Well, why can't they prove it? I mean, I haven't seen too much proof about it.
What kind of proof do you want?
Pictures. Photos. Actual documentaries. I would love that if National Geographic can actually document something such as that. Or, for example, or anybody.
Talk to Pammy and come on up. And to this point, okay, I am not, I've done drawings of them. I have recordings of voices in their language. Pictures, though, have just not, you know, it's kind of like auras. You have to have a special camera for auras because it's taken a different spectrum of light. Well, with Sasquatches, they're the same way. They are dimensional travelers. I mean, they're.
I told them interdimensional travelers.
Huh?
That's exactly what I said. They're interdimensional. That's why they can't necessarily be captured on film.
They can if they want you to. Okay,
to, yeah.
But up to this point, that has not been a desire. What happens every time that there is serious public attention to Sasquatches, we have what the hunters come in. The only way that they can prove that there is one is to have a dead one. Well, they aren't stupid by any means. In fact, at one point in time, I asked kind of weapons they had. And my friend thought about it for a while, and he goes, well, we have some in our library/museum. They have no need.
Weapons at all?
Huh?
They have
in the museum. They don't use weapons at all now.
There's no need. Why? You can do anything you want with thought.
That's true.
I mean, it's like putting that shield around you and I to not let bullshit into your space.
What do they do with their dead ones?
Well, the one that you die is, I've never asked that question. I cannot actually answer it.
Oh.
Sure. That'd be fine. Because their lifespans are, actually, from my measurements, and I won't say this is theirs necessarily, when I was 40 was the first one that I met. Well, he was 400.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was the same age as I. I was the first human he had ever, or Homo sapien, he had ever spoke with. And that was just because of whatever came out of me in that call, called him from his dimension across to come and see me. I heard him coming down the canyon. Not canyon, but the little ravine we were in. And what I heard was, why have you called me?
Cool.
Why are you in my backyard? I almost pissed my pants. I mean,
wow.
It was no joke.
Do they speak actual English, or did you hear, like, voices in your head?
Voices in your head. Their actual language is like a Aborigine clicking language. If you want to know
their own language, or like a dolphin. You know how they have clicks, but it's on like a different spectrum. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Kelly. Okay, thank you. So you use it and give it back, okay? Yeah. One. So you guys are having McDonald's, huh?
What's that?
I said you're having McDonald's?
Yeah. No, it's done now.
Because
he didn't get a big enough fry.
She ate them all. She ended up beating them all.
Nah.
Wait, you see Rinky. Now, he's who you're going to get pictures of.
What's that? Who is? Pictures
Rinky.
Of who?
You
is that the one who wants to see me?
That is Johnny's. Her and I's babies. Actually, there's a Sasquatch father involved, too. But it was like a spiritual trend. Okay, as they spoke about Jesus being born by spirit. Well, it's kind of like that. I met her a long time ago. And it turns out the original the original I met is her dad. And I didn't know that at the time. Because the first time we met, she wanted to have a baby. And I said, I said, you need to go and talk to your peers. To your family about it, because that, you know, that's a hard thing to be, what, mulatto?
Yeah, he said,
mulatto?
Mulatto, yes.
A Sasquatch girl wanted him to have a baby with her.
Well, we did have a baby.
You had a baby with a Sasquatch?
I told you that a long time ago.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you said no to her.
I'm sorry?
I thought you said no to her. I thought you rejected her.
I did, and I did, and I did again until I got approval, and then the reasons behind it.
So he had a baby.
That's what he's saying. This is news to me.
How
was
the baby with Homo sapien and...
Come, I so strongly urge you to come. You think I was BSing? No. No, there's much more to the story than I usually tell.
You're withholding, Scotty.
Well, so are
hey,
you.
Hey, Scotty, are you still using the same email address, creator00earthnet, or earth, what, something like that?
Net, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I think I just stunned Pam.
Oh, no.
You were holding back.
Well, and what happened is after I talked with her dad and had gone to council, and I mean, I was surrounded. It was incredible. I was surrounded. It was like I was under a microscope to see about this particular issue, because I wasn't going to cross them. I would not offend them and do something that would not be the right thing to do. Well, it had finally come to the time it was the right thing to do. And I invited Johnny to come to my home. In fact, she still has open invitation, always. Anyway, we did create a baby.
Wait, by spirit or by carnal knowledge?
I'm sorry?
By spirit or carnal knowledge?
Say, a good way of asking. It was by spirit and carnal knowledge.
Ooh. Ooh, Tina, do you hear that?
But they were involved, too, from way... She didn't want anything to do with all the stuff around that she knew of. And the other father that's involved is Sasquatch, but he's from the other side of the Earth. I think he's from, I want to say Europe-ish-y, but not Europe, but not Europe. I don't know exactly where he's from because he's had a couple of encounters before. And I'm not really his favorite person, so to speak.
I'm sorry, I have to ask for something naughty. I'm so sorry. Weren't you really small compared to her like other Sasquatch men?
Well, she's very young.
Oh, she's young. Like, what, 14?
I mean, it was like an 18-year-old leaving the family to find her own path.
Okay.
Yeah. As far as physical size, is that what you're saying? Asking?
Yes, of course that's what I'm saying.
Oh, she's still she was pretty big at the time. I would say 7'3" to 7'7", somewhere in there.
Yeah, weren't you too small for her?
Huh?
Weren't you too small for her compared to her Sasquatch boyfriend, suitor?
What is sex about?
What?
Is sex about the member or what you do with it?
Sometimes it is about the member, yeah.
Well, then there you be. There you be, if that's what's important. It's not always what you have, it's what you do with it.
Don't you remember Califia won't let me have sex with one because it'll rip me apart, she said.
Well, after I addressed that, she was correct in her statement.
Okay.
But it was not about, you know, that was just the creation part of it.
Okay. You guys, just a sidebar, Califia has met JP. We've all been out together.
Good.
How fun.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes. Went dancing out there. And yes, it was in a quiet, dark atmosphere. Had some mojitos. The mojitos are delicious, and we just got out there to dance on the dance floor. Yes,
so you can keep.
And we were out with one of her men.
One of her men.
Oh no, her boss. Wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't say that. Nothing.
So JC, that means that you're keeping up with Pammy. I'm good. Glad to hear that.
Well, I don't know.
Like I said, she was born with a golden spoon in her ass, but it's turned out to be a good thing.
Who's that?
You.
When was I born with that?
I agree.
But if you know anything about gold, it's one of the highest conductivities of electrons and electricity. And that's what her body is built of.
Ooh, and so you're right on there, Seth.
Transference has truly helped her in many, many, many ways.
You are right.
Of course I'm right. I didn't mean to be smug about that, but I know you pretty well, Pam.
Hmm.
At least part of you. Yep. That you choose to show. You aren't holding anything back, are you? Nah.
Got like an onion.
You're a lucky man.
Ah, look at that. Thank you, Sasquatch.
She's quite a challenge. She's the Leo woman. I'm the Leo man. But boy, oh boy. I mean, yeah. It's interesting.
Truly, not only self-promoters, but promoters of others.
Now, Jake, can I share your story?
She is true.
Can I share your little
yes.
story? JP has an interesting experience when he was experimenting with drugs when he was younger.
Ah.
He really was able to turn on all his faculties.
Turn on what?
All his faculties, all his...
How much fun!
Yeah, but, yeah, so that's cool.
Did he do it?
What?
How did he do it?
Well, when he was experimenting, I said.
Well, what do you mean? What did you experience
was,
in the turning it all on thing that you're
it
saying?
It was called gel. Purple Gel was, it was, to me, I started doing it for, you know, hallucinogens and just for fun. But when I realized it started raising up my
eyes. Is that like purple micro dot acid or something?
It was purple gel,
purple,
yeah. It was like,
purple gel.
It wasn't paper, it was a little gel, but it was like hard plastic. Little tiny dots.
Oh, yeah.
You cut them up,
yeah.
Small, size of your pinky nail. Or smaller than that. I mean,
smaller than that. Yeah, tiny little dot. Yep.
Yeah, and it was just, wow, and incredible. It, basically, then I started taking it for IQ and logistics, and I started seeing everything, how it all came together. And, well, you know what, I did it too much to the point where I started thinking too hard, too loud, out loud. I was thinking out loud. People were able to hear me, and they were asking me, where is that coming from? Is that you?
When he wasn't speaking.
Yeah, when I'm not saying nothing, and they could just feel the energy, and they're just turning around. Yeah,
bring some with you when you come.
I opened up a couple of doors, and then before you know it, now I've been able to tap into it without ever having to take it. But it's,
yeah.
I don't know. It's out there. It's
so
now,
it opened up your synapses of your brain or something like that. One of those kind of.
I'm not quite sure, but basically now it's like everything falls into place. I walk next to the streetlights, and they're always turning on as I'm walking by. And I'm like, I'm thinking it's coincidental, but I just think, no, it's not. It's just, I have too many in one day. It's just, it's interesting. But, I mean, I didn't mean for her to open it up.
Oh, but they're all into that stuff.
All
right. Hey, whatever it takes to open those doors.
Well, I've opened up, I've opened up a lot more doors than I should have.
Pandora's Box.
What's that?
It's Pandora's Box.
Pandora's Box, yeah.
Pandora's Box, yeah. And now I'm just been, like, trying to learn how to control it, use it for good. I think I opened up a lot more spiritual than I should have. You know, I went to a Catholic school all my life.
Oh, man.
Yeah. once I graduated, I was just like, like I'm busting out the doors looking left to right. I'm white out like, where am I going? Where am I going? Oh, the school called my parents. Like, if I missed one day of school, boom, there they were calling my parents. It's like, oh. Yeah. Like, I felt.
Controlling the politics of what's going on. Or just to the edge of doing that, the political power of the illumination that you have been given will take you much further. And that it won't be like a pebble in a pond. It'll be like a comet hitting the earth. So, Pam, yes, kisses to you. You chose well.
He loves hearing that.
So
these days, I mean, you still shipping? BC?
He's here, he's here.
Hello?
Can you hear us? Wait, you put the phone down.
I put the phone down.
Hello?
Can you hear us?
I think they're cutting out.
No, we're full signal. You guys there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Maybe Tina cut out. Tina cuts out a lot. She's from another world, and she cuts out a lot.
We all are.
Well, yeah. How funny. I think she was going to say something profound, and she just cut off. Yeah, Scotty, I think maybe JP could hear something tendonitis.
There she is. Say that again.
I think JP could use her tender, loving guidance. And I'm for real.
When are you going to come?
Or send him to us or whatever. You can come down and visit us.
I can while do. Southern California has been very interesting to me. It altered my life.
How so?
Because I never knew others thought the same way I did. I thought I was all alone up here on the ocean, all by myself, and I'd go on the, I'd walk the ocean and the cliffs
for hours every day.
You're talking about how the waves come in? You guys should bring in the waves?
No, I didn't mean it like that. I mean going in asking to see the more. To experience the more. And with that, as you stated in the experiences that you've done, with that more is comes contrast for the balance. And that balance gives you the holistic appreciation where you're at. That's why I'm so glad that you and Pam met. You're the right guy.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
At least for the moment, how about that?
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to stay above water. I'm thinking as many things as I possibly can in projects. And it's all coming together, you know? Just one
sure.
After another after another.
Your first name is
Jean-Paul.
Do you serve?
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
Bring your surfboard.
Bring my surfboard?
Yes.
Oh, wait, are you up north?
Yeah, I'm
in the south. Oh, shit. Is there a lot of great whites out there?
Hell yes.
I know that. I used to do it in Bodega Bay.
Oh, Bodega Bay for a long time. Tamales is a lot worse. That's their breeding grounds. They get
that's their eating grounds, and they are
being in there.
And you know, and I'm sorry, not I didn't mean to cut you off, but there, when I was surfing and boogie boarding, there was a time where then all of a sudden there was these people started coming and perching on the sands, and people found them loving. So they all accepted them. But now here's a great problem. Now we have sharks right out the outside where it wasn't as bad. We were getting bit left and right, and then the abalone divers were getting their heads taken off completely. And it's just like, wow, that just gave me a scare. That made me sticking my head underwater looking for those dark figures to swim by. And I'd do that for a while, and I said, okay, I'm taking the next wave in.
My brother.
Yeah, I get that for a while. All right, I'm done.
The past 30 years. And he's never had an issue. And he goes to Fort Bragg to abalone.
Shit.
So
that's
what you want in your reality, you'll damn well get it.
You look at them
right in the face and you punch them in the nose. If they're aggressive, it'll leave you alone. All of a sudden, you're not them.
Fear in life. I don't know why.
Dog. That's your choice. Just like bears, mountain lions, etc. What a concept, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, I have a feeling I'll see you pretty soon. Now, so you know, that twice a year, going north and going south, actually we have whales that stop here to feed, and also the Aleutian geese. If you want to see something as in the buffalo spoken about 100 years ago, come with the Aleutian geese at that point in time, and you will see the skies fill as far as you can see with the Aleutian geese.
Wow, that would be incredible.
Oh, yes, it is. It will do incredible things to your perspective.
You know, speaking of the geese, you know what I've always found incredible was that one true story about one girl and dad, played by Jeff Daniels, or not Jeff Daniels.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. And then him and his daughter take the geese through these air gliders and actually have this whole other little flock of geese that head out towards the north. Yeah, towards the south.
Jack Daniels reminds me of Sour Mash. And him and I do not agree, so we stay away from each other. Makes a person ornery.
Yeah. I take it you don't agree.
No, I'm not saying I disagree. I'm just saying that for me personally, Jack Daniels.
Oh, Jack Daniels. Oh, no, I said Jeff Daniels, the actor.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, Jeff Daniels, that played on that one movie, the true, but it was based on a true story. But he played the actor as a father.
Fantasies, or do you like to create your own realities?
Yeah.
That's the question. That's why I stopped watching movies for like 10 years. Because I chose to create my own realities versus watching someone else's fantasy.
Yeah, true. I mean, that's what I found amazing about this the story, about how, you know, they brought geese up that way.
By the way, you're an art person, right?
Yes, very,
yeah.
Very. So
galleries and that kind of stuff?
I do, yeah. I actually promote Area 33, which is an art gallery down here. And what it does from dubstep music, good vibes, good beats, natural beats, two rooms, fire pit on the second floor. We do live sculptures, live paintings, massages, tattoos, all underneath one roof.
How about
that? It goes from 10 till 6. We actually serve past 2 o'clock.
In there, too.
What's that?
Body painting?
Yes. Body painting, spray painting, yes. Yep.
As
you can actually
get that
area for free. Look at the images.
She would love it. Paint her.
Who is this?
Who would love it?
Yeah, she will.
Oh, are you talking about Kelly? Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Paint you.
Scotty's not here.
I take it you're an artist.
I'm an art. I appreciate good art. Yes.
Art. Nice.
In any kind of form it is. It be written, painting, sculpture, cooking. When it's done with excellence, it has a mark about it.
Yeah. I highly agree. That's exactly what I feel on my business cards. They say, it says, bringing art, music, and life together, .. And then on the bottom, .. Making the
I
world
like
a better.
Bam.
Good, I'm glad.
thank you.
I do. I like this man.
Good.
Come up here and the things that you asked about, I'm not going to promise about photographs, but your energy is as such, because there's huge trust issues here.
Yes.
Most of the time when you meet a Sasquatch the first time, they make you want to piss your pants.
Oh, my God. I would
put your metal to see what you're about. If you don't have the courage, you'll never have opening to it. As you
right.
do have the courage, you'll be shown unbelievable things without what motive, so to speak. I mean, if you're just trying to prove something, now they ain't got nothing to prove. If you want to know for yourself, yes.
No, I just want to feel it. I want to feel everything. Like I said, you know, ever since I've opened up my doors, there's nothing I wouldn't believe. There's nothing I wouldn't hear, or I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, what's so interesting is about their origins. This is totally logical. As as Tibetan people went into the hills, so did the giants of old. And they, ascended, as we would call it now, into those areas of, I won't say immortality, but what we would see as immortality, yes. To where if you want to be someplace, you think and you're there.
Yeah, exactly. Like the guys in...
We go to Shasta, too. Oh, that... I have seen countless what we would call UFOs disappear into the heart of that mountain.
Oh, I would love to. That's absolutely.
I've been inside to their their airport hangar, if you want to call it that. See more than 300 different vehicles.
Really?
Yes. That's what I said. There's a lot of things I haven't told you about.
Yeah, you're disclosing a lot tonight. I like. Need a sidebar.
Very special things. Where to? Pluto caves. The caves that go from the tubes that go from the north of Mount Shasta all the way up to Klamath Falls that the Indians used to escape. Well, there's lots of other things in there, too. In fact, one I dared, you know, as an entity, I said, fuck you, you know, draw blood on me.
How many years have you been meeting the Sasquatch now?
Huh?
How many years have you been friends with him now?
Quite a few. How many? Yeah. The perfect time is the answer I was told to give you. The perfect amount of maturation.
Bullshit answer.
The answer. But you're asking for something that when there is no time.
I know there is no time.
Then why did you state the question as you did?
Because I'm driving.
Oh. You never answered my question, too, by the way, that I asked you about the house on 5th Street. Did you have anything to do with that?
Well, I have a house in 5th Street in San Rafael, but not 5th Street where you live. No.
Okay.
So maybe you're picking up 5th Street in San Rafael.
No, it wasn't about me. It was about someone else that had stated that to me. And I was checking. I always back check everything to get validity on it. Is it, you know, fact or fiction? And some people tend to be full of shit sometimes.
Right.
Oh, I told you last night, you know what I discovered?
What?
Revelations 23.
When had you come about it?
25.
What do you mean?
Just what I said. Revelations 23:24.
How did you hear about it?
Well, I just something got into me to where I looked and I asked the questions differently, and I went into the occult, and then I found a bunch of different search engines and libraries that work well, and I found reference to it. Now, reference, I found actually all of them. And so I copied them on a Word document, and then I sent to Bob and asked him, is this the same that Ion was speaking of, that you have been speaking of? And he has not answered me.
Ah, which means yes. Good for you.
Well, and then I think I sent you something. I sent you a book, as a matter of fact, and it's of, and go all the way to the bottom. It's a long, it's a big book, but just, it's an e-book, run all the way to the bottom and read
it. I don't think there's any link in what you sent me. Just FYI.
I'm sorry?
I don't think there was any link there.
I didn't send you the link on it?
I don't think so. I didn't see it.
Okay. Well, I'll dig it back up. And all the way at the bottom.
Yeah.
Encapsulates exactly the premise we have been working on. You'll love it. And actually, you're going to start back reading. Because I cared about the thesis statement. What's the bottom line of it? So I went all the way to the bottom. And
okay.
It could take you 3 to 5 minutes, if that, or you could spend 5 months on it. But that's up to you. It will.
There's no link email that post.
Yep.
You made me go into the dupes. I haven't been in the dupes in months. Oh, here comes Bruce. There's that cute little street.
Well,
yeah, go in there.
It's kind of that in between, what do they call, not tacit, what's the word Bob uses, the in between? Tactile.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that venue is very tactile. It doesn't give the end results. It gives all the in between bullshit of reasoning, arguments, discussion, debate, etc.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I got spanked, too, on our discussions.
Really?
Yes. Insinuating that I was dissing Bob, or dissing us as far as Ion / Bob. And I don't believe I've ever disrespected Ion. Have you ever perceived that from me?
No, not never.
Okay, I didn't think so. Bob, yeah. Well, a bitch is a bitch, so. And I understand why he does, but he's in between. You know, he's in still proving stage.
When did somebody say you disrespected him?
That's what Ion said when I wrote to him about Good Friday.
Oh, okay.
Hey,
did anyone talk on the show about how Obama was really dead? I mean, Osama was really dead before in the Benazir Bhutto thing?
No, but we already knew that from several sources.
Right.
No, it's just that is where McLuhanism kicks in. You know, most people believe from those quote-unquote trusted sources what they're told, without question. Most 90%.
Oh, here.
That's why half 1% control the world.
Yeah. Actually, go there. That's perfect. We're going to go to a screening tonight, so we're looking for parking.
Okay. But anyway, I'm glad to hear your voice. I'm glad to hear John's voice, John Paul. John?
Pleasure meeting you, yes, sir.
Yes, and we will talk to you soon and see you maybe even sooner.
Exactly, perfect.
I would really like that. Thank you.
Have a good night. Enjoy yourself.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Go to that place.